Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. My name is Tim. Thank you for joining us today. And the topic of our podcast, we have an unsolved mystery today. It's the murder of William Desmond Taylor. Taylor was an actor and director in Hollywood back in the early days of Hollywood. And he was murdered, and the case remains unsolved. He was murdered in 1922. So it's almost been 100 years, and the case is still unsolved. We're going to talk about William Desmond Taylor and his murder and some of the suspects. But before we do, let me introduce our panel. I am joined by always, as always, by the very lovely and talented, the Queen of Mean, the Mistress of the Macabre, the Empress of Evil, pill-popping, penis-loving Brandy. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm good, Timmy. I'm getting ready to go on break, so how are you?
I'm fine. What do you mean break?
Well, we're getting ready to be off for Thanksgiving for a couple of days, so.
That is true.
So, Black Friday's coming. I mean, this is
when
a huge
is Thanksgiving?
Deal.
Thanksgiving next is Thursday. Next week. Next Thursday.
Thanksgiving is next Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, welcome.
Yeah.
Holy Christ.
You haven't been introduced yet. But, Brandy, this is your segment. We're hoping to at least get one more podcast out after this before Thanksgiving, but
yeah,
maybe two if we're lucky.
Cool.
You have any plans for the weekend, Brandy?
For this weekend, it's just going to be me and Noah. So I'm not sure what we'll get into. We'll just have to
smoke a little weed.
Well, clearly he's holding.
Yeah.
So I have to toss his room and see what's going on with that, but. He doesn't have we don't have
practice.
Is he
shooting hoops this weekend?
No. He enjoyed practice, so I think he'll go back, and we'll have to see. They took the week off because, it's Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So, next week. So, they got a little downtime after one practice, so.
Okay.
We don't have that, but I'm sure we'll find something to get into.
Where's Dave at?
The aquarium. He has to work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me introduce the other member of our panel. He is a great distinction, the moral compass of the podcast.
Why does he get this wonderful introduction and I get pill-popping, penis-loving?
Well, you're
not introduced yet.
The very, the moral compass of the program, the very honorable Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm okay, Tim. I'm a little disturbed, I gotta say.
What is wrong?
Okay, the colonel threw out the question of the day yesterday.
Okay, and this is on our Facebook page. We have a Facebook page called History Dweebs, the podcast, in which we all interact with the listeners. All right, and you put a question out for the group?
I put the question out for the group. What is the strangest place we'd ever done it? Because
podcast
before that. Yeah.
Freaks.
We got some bitches freakers out there. They're freaky ass.
No one does it in a bed, apparently.
No, apparently nobody even got a bed in the house. And then I put out a question.
That's not what you asked. You asked the weirdest place.
But who would have thought? I mean, the girl falling on a trampoline, don't she know that that's got to come with a disclaimer that you could get hurt like that? Don't try this at home.
I think there'd be a lot going on there.
There would be a lot going on there.
It is very risky on a trampoline, I must say.
Yeah,
I wouldn't do it on the trampoline. Unless they were just laying on the trampoline, it wouldn't be so bad. But I'm assuming she meant they were bouncing.
Well, you would assume so.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could do it on a trampoline, like if you was like laying down on your back and then the girl just bounced. And then
man, that's
and
a lot.
On top of you.
It's a lot.
That'd be an Evel Knievel trick, right there.
It would be because you know if you miss
that bone,
there's problems all the way around.
Yeah.
You better hope you're hitting out with a floppy if it comes down at the wrong angle because you're going to be messed up bad.
Yeah. Oh, that was fun. That was a funny question. Before we get started into the podcast, let me
clearly that was funny.
Why? That was. I'm sorry, I'm low energy.
Easy, Jeb.
I'm Jeb Bush today. You can clap now.
I don't know. I don't know why you're low energy. You're the only one that got to eat lunch around here today.
Buying you lunch every day.
Well, no, you didn't have to buy me lunch. I was about to walk down to the market there and buy a sandwich. Demi come in here and say, oh, we're changing the podcast time because people have to know, like the old people do the early bird specials. Timmy does the early bird special for lunch.
I wake up at 4 o'clock. So, by the time 11 gets here, it's lunchtime.
Yeah, buy a car.
Yeah, it's too early. I have to come in to open in this damn place.
At what? About 10:45 every day. Oh. About 10:40, he starts preparing for lunch.
I've got to beat the crowd.
Yeah. Then he runs down and gets his blue plate special at Subway.
Mm-hmm.
Then he comes back here and says, you know what? Because it's a Friday and Timmy's going to be taken out off at getting out of here early.
I'm not getting out of here early. I've been here 7 hours already.
7 hours?
He got here at midnight last night.
What, are we living in France, motherfucker, this week?
He got here at midnight last night. I mean, Jesus.
I've already put my 7 hours in today.
Well, and his 52,000 steps.
By the time we get this podcast done, it will be 7 o'clock. That's why I wanted to start early so we could get done in time.
But me and the devil, and the devil's only eating yogurt. So
oh, don't give me, she's out the door before me. Don't let her give me that bullshit.
That's not true.
No, I'm not worried about being out the door. I'm just talking about...
he's talking about lunch.
I ain't had a damn thing to eat but 2 cough drops.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
I mean, that's what I have.
Do you want a special K bar?
You got special K bars?
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it. But I got me a protein bar.
You're not eating during the podcast. Afterwards.
No. God forbid.
God forbid, yeah. No, I'm not like the devil. I got more consideration for
Thank you, Colonel. All right. We want to give a shout out to our... the folks who support us on Patreon. If you would like to support the podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/historydweeps, and anything that you can give would be greatly appreciated, a little or a lot, or Colonel?
Oh, just a wee little bit. A wee little bit.
That's so we want to give us...
just the tip. Just give us the tip. That's all we ask.
Just for a minute.
I don't know about that. We would like to thank our those who support us on Patreon, Alicia and Chip, Brandy McBride, Lisa, did I get it right?
I think so.
Lisa. Leslie Hager, Jahara, Andrew Happ, Angelo, thank you, Angelo, Bridget Clavey, Cindy Liu, Charlie from the Insight Podcast, Amber Scoville, of course, Jennifer and her son Hunter and her mom Linda, and Rudy the Wonder Dog. So, thank you all.
I have not heard, we have not seen Jahara around lately, have you?
No, she may be busy. That concerns me. Well, you know, she's a Dolphins fan, so I think maybe she lay low during the football season.
That could be. She's
but Jahara, if you're out there listening,
check in with us.
Check with him with us. Yes.
Tim probably pissed her off.
No. Yeah. Jahara and I, we're buddies.
What did you say to her, Tim?
No, I did not piss her off. She and I are buddies. Okay. So let's get into the story of the murder of William Desmond Taylor. And I'd like to thank Larry. Larry wanted us to do this. I did the research on this thing weeks ago, and I wrote the script weeks ago, so I had to kind of go back this morning and get a refresher on it. But Larry had requested this story, so... we're going to talk about the murder of William Desmond Taylor. He was born William Cunningham Dean Tanner in Carlow, Ireland, on April 26, 1872. He's born on April 26, Colonel?
April 26th?
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know what, I'm lost on that one, Timmy.
Well, his mother was pregnant.
Oh, she was pregnant. I thought April
26th. She must have been pregnant through Thanksgiving, Christmas.
Oh, she was miserable.
Easter, St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. I've got May babies. You miss, you're stuck all the holidays.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they celebrate Thanksgiving.
Well, I don't think they have Indians in Ireland, Timmy.
Oh, what that has to do with celebrating Thanksgiving?
Well, they would have had to land on
oak. They could still be thankful.
They would land.
Thankful for their potatoes.
They would land on Old Plymouth Rock.
Maybe they have a different thing.
They celebrate Christmas, New Year's, and St. Patrick's Day and Easter.
St. Patrick drove the snakes out of
it. Do they celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
I think so. In Ireland?
In Ireland, it's like a 3-day thing.
Yeah.
Is it?
So she
it's a reason to drink in Ireland, those people.
So William Desmond Taylor's mother, she was pregnant throughout the holidays, we could say.
We could.
Taylor grew up in Ireland, but he left home at the age of 18 when he had a falling out with his father. He migrated to the United States, working as an engineer, a gold miner in Alaska, an antique dealer, and finally as an actor in New York City.
He was a Klondiker.
He was. He'd done a lot of different things. In 1901, he married a woman by the name of Ethel May Harrison. Never marry a woman named Ethel.
No, or a girl whose middle name May.
Well, you know, when they look at the kid in at the hospital when they're born, and they said, she's unattractive. We better call her Ethel. Ethel. Yeah.
We don't have any Ethels in the group, so we can say that.
Yeah. So,
really?
He married Ethel. And,
tell me the last time you ran across Ethel and thought, oh, that woman's hot.
Never, but this disturbs me a little bit because they had a daughter in 1903. You know what they named her?
Gertrude.
Ethel. It's like a junior.
Oh, yeah, no.
An Ethel Junior.
An Ethel Junior? Little Ethel.
EJ.
She was Little Ethel.
Well,
she was ethanol.
Maybe. Now, he was not able to support his family as an actor. So he worked as an antique dealer. In 1908, so this is 7 years after he was married to Ethel and when his daughter was 5 years old, William Desmond Taylor went to lunch, and he never returned.
That's going to happen to you one day.
It is going to happen to you one day, Timmy. And you know what? It's going to be one of those days when you're picking up a sandwich for me.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, because it's all about you.
No, this dude walked out on
this. It's going to be like, God damn it, when's Timmy coming back? Oh, well.
Yeah,
he's not. Wait a minute. Remember yesterday as he was hauling balls to get out of here and go home, Timmy photobombed a news story.
Yeah, there's a news crew interviewing a policeman.
They were on the sidewalk.
Just walks right between them.
I don't care. I do not care. It's a public sidewalk.
Cut.
Yeah.
Well, I can sit there while they record a news story.
Photobomb the shit right out of it. Just kept
it
moving.
But it would have been an extra 8 feet to go around the camera. You just walk straight through them.
Head down. Doesn't matter. He's a man on a mission.
Doesn't matter to me. Get my steps in. So in 1908, he goes to lunch, never and it returns. He walks out on his wife and young daughter without saying a word.
What a dick.
Yeah, it was a dick move.
Yeah, they should have had it coming.
In 1912, I mean, you're in a house of two Ethels. I mean,
yeah, I know. You know, you got two ugly women. I mean, they ain't nothing keeping you there.
Right. Oh, goodness.
So, 19.
And he was a thespian. He had plenty of opportunities with the ladies. You know that.
Yeah, he was a ladies' man. That's for sure.
A thespian?
A thespian.
Yeah. He was a ladies' man. That's for sure. We'll get into that.
Unlike our listeners, I don't know if we got any thespians. We got a whole nest of lesbians.
Jesus.
But
we love lesbians.
A nest?
We got a whole nest of lesbians. They travel in packs. Don't you know that?
Why would I know that?
Well, you should
know. You play softball.
Because you was in one of the packs.
Oh, Jesus.
So they kicked you out.
They're called softball teams.
Yeah.
So... he left William Desmond Taylor left for Hollywood after he walked out on his family. But he served briefly in the British Army during the First World War. Thank you for your service. And he returned to Hollywood after the war. to make some movies, and he actually became quite successful. His most famous films were based on the works of such as Tom Sawyer, Anne of Green Gables, and Huckleberry Finn. So, you know, this was like from 1917 to 1920. He was kind of on a roll in Hollywood, making silent movies at the time.
How do you do Huckleberry? Huckleberry, is that what you, Huckleberry?
Huckleberry.
How do you do a Huckleberry Finn silent? It wouldn't make no sense whatsoever.
William Desmond Taylor had a younger brother named Dennis, who followed his brother's footsteps in the antique business. And he also came to Hollywood.
I thought you were going to answer me.
They should
no,
have been at
I'm
school
ignoring
for the deaf.
And he went to Hollywood to get work with his brother. Now, he followed his brother's lead because he deserted his wife and two daughters in 1912.
Did they have one of those big bubbles in the corner?
So, both of these guys dumped their wives and families. So,
well, there's a lot of Ethels.
Yeah.
They need to marry better.
So after his wife, William Desmond Taylor's wife tracked him down because now he's a movie star.
Well, right.
Right. So she tracks him down and he pays her $50 a month child support.
That's lovely.
What's a lot of money back in 1920?
You know, he should have been doing that the whole time.
Granted. Yeah, sure. Taylor. Taylor's wife, Ethel, eventually obtained
a $50 a month back in 1920?
Yeah.
Fitty.
He obtained a divorce. She obtained a divorce decree, and then she remarried. So I guess her alimony got cut off at
that
point.
She turned a page.
Yeah. But she told her daughter, Ethel Jr., that her father was a handsome actor, which he was. He was William Desmond Taylor. And his daughter began, they called his daughter Daisy, so they wouldn't confuse her with the mom.
Oh, yeah.
Daisy then began corresponding with her father, and she would later visit him out in Hollywood. Amazingly, there was no evidence of hard feelings between William and his wife, Ethel. And he had a good relationship with his daughter, even though he deserted him.
Ethel's a forgiving type.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know your capacity to forgive is directly related to your attractiveness. I think
that'd be like $604 in today's money.
Well, that sucks, really. That's
yeah.
Not a lot.
Yeah, see,
wasn't a lot. Okay. So in 1922, William Desmond Taylor was at the height of his career, not only as an actor but as a director. He owned a beautiful Hollywood home. He was handsome, famous, and wealthy, and he was known a bit of a ladies' man.
Because
of the wine.
Did he have the wine, Tim?
And Brandy's going to tell us what happens next.
So, picture it.
Hollywood.
February 1st, 1922, Hollywood, California.
A day before Groundhog's Day.
It is.
Yes.
So, it was an unusually cold night in Los Angeles. I don't know why that's important, but it is.
Well, it comes into play here.
Farmer's Almanac, got that going.
It's how they couldn't decide how long he'd been dead because the temperature was above 45 degrees.
Yeah, it was probably in the mid-50s.
There's a reason.
I try to paint a picture when I write
these
scripts.
We don't know the method behind Timmy's madness.
I know.
So we just roll with it.
We're just along. So despite the fact that this was during Prohibition, Billy Taylor and one of his ladies from silent film, comedian Mabel.
Well, here's the thing. The silent actors, do they moan when they have orgasms?
Do they have to know
they
lines?
Just bob their head real quick.
Do they have to memorize their lines? That's my thing.
Huh? I guess they do because they have to lip sync it, right? Didn't they?
I don't think so.
Not really?
But there was a silent film comedian. And her name was Mabel. Ethel and Mabel.
Ethel and okay. Mabel. It seems like he made poor life choices.
He really did.
Mabel and North.
Because you know, I don't care what she looks like. You're not going. Mabel's not going to give you a Woody.
No. Well, actually, if you're there with somebody really hot and she just tells you her middle name is Mabel, it's going to be a boner killer to me.
Jesus.
I mean, think about it, Mabel. Okay. Now, what if, okay, what if you're Mabel. Getting all romantical with a guy here.
And he tells me his name's Mabel.
And he, well, or he tells, I don't know, what's a guy?
Lanny.
Well, she's already got that going. But I don't know, what's a guy's name equivalent to that? Like
Eugene?
Yeah, Eugene. So you know every time you see
Harry.
You,
his name's Harry. Okay. Archibald.
Eugene.
Archibald and Eugene. I'm Archibald Eugene.
So is there Spencer, is there a name, Brandy, that you when you hear a man's name and you don't even have to see him, you just
is, it, is there a deal breaking name for yeah. you?
Eugene.
It's like okay, Eugene. She's saying Eugene. Let's go with that.
Your mouth's saying Eugene.
I made it clear.
All well, right. We got Mabel and Ethel.
Yeah.
Well, she's got Lanny and Eugene. Any of those like names that are for like that you call somebody when you're a kid, like okay, so if I'm going out on a date with somebody and it's, you know, I'm Tommy. Well, no, you're not. You're 40 years old. Your name's Tom.
Well, he's like 60 and he's Timmy.
No, I don't call myself that. You call me that.
Yeah. Well, I call him Timmy.
I know you do. So anyway, so he's with this comedian, Mabel Norman, and they're at his house enjoying orange gin blossom or orange blossom.
He's thinking, "Hell, this is great. I could be stuck home with Ethel. Instead, I've got Mabel there."
Orange blossom.
Give me some of that tonight.
Cocktails. And they were discussing Nietzsche, Freud, and the movies.
Do you and Dave ever sit around and talk about Nietzsche, Freud, and the movies?
As a matter of fact, we do.
Can I jump in here?
Really? What is it about Freud that you discussed?
Not more movies.
More movies than Freud and Nietzsche.
Right. Can I just jump in to make a quick correction here?
Okay.
People often get the name wrong. It's pronounced Nisha. Nisha is the correct pronunciation.
Oh, I don't care.
Yeah, and what was his most famous work?
Huh?
What was his most famous work there?
Oh, his the superhuman thing.
The Prince was his most famous work.
No, that's Machiavelli.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I think you're wrong.
No, the Prince was Machiavelli, and
here's the thing: I don't care because Nishi, he's not
yeah,
Amer-
you're right. You're right.
Nishi was he's not super, American.
Nishi was the uber human, you know, the uber person, the most powerful.
I was thinking of Machiavelli. Okay,
yeah.
Continue, Brandy.
But it's Nisha.
I don't still don't care.
Well, I just don't want you to be Timmy.
Yes, well, you know.
First of all,
but do you and Dave sit around and talk about philosophy and
we talk? Well, and like I said, it's mainly about movies. Sometimes philosophy, because I, you know, wonder what his philosophy is on having the movie Zombievers on my Netflix.
Yeah, that's on there.
Yeah,
Zombievers.
It's on the Netflix.
That's a scary-ass movie too. Because if you think about beavers going zombie, but me and the Mrs. Colonel. I almost got informal and called her by her first name, Mrs. Colonel. We will sometimes sit around and look at each other and do the to be or not to be thing.
No, you don't. Yeah. So,
do you really?
No.
You quote?
No, we just think about should we run steak knives through our eyes or
right or watch Zombievers
or watch Zombievers.
My suggestion would be steak knife in the eye.
I like Cheerleader Zombies. Yeah. That was a good one.
Well, that's a whole different genre
they had
of movie.
A lot of zombie boobs in that
genre of movies. Yeah. So Mabel was playing comic riffs on the
Friedrich
piano.
Friedrich Nietzsche is not a handsome man.
No, he was not.
Look at that statue.
Nice.
He was a 70s porn man before his
yeah, name. He was. All right. So Mabel's playing comic riffs on the piano.
Comic riffs?
That's oh, really? What it says. Mabel was talented. Well, you know, if you're Mabel, you've got to have yeah. you got to have some. Bring some to the table.
I bet Mabel better bring some to the table. You know what? I wonder if she. I bet she was good in bed. I bet Mabel and Ethel because they got
she's probably
work
good at giving.
If you're
oral.
Mabel,
they're grateful.
They're oh, grateful, yeah. and well, they got to. They know they
got
to.
You
earn
got it. You got to suck a mean dick if you're Ethel or Mabel. You just don't get opportunities every day.
Suck well, the chrome right off that son of a bitch.
Well, you don't. You really don't. You don't bring. You don't bring a Mabel home at night to talk about Nietzsche and Freud. I'm telling you.
Wow.
You don't bring a Mabel to a Lexi fight.
No, you do not. All continue, right. Brandy.
So at about 7:45 at night.
See how precise I am?
Yeah, well, he's on Timmy time.
You know what? I'm just trying to think of something. He said a mean dick.
I know. I've had to move past it.
A big angry dick. You better stop.
Well, I'm just saying, if your name is Mabel, you've got to be—you have to have some other talents because I know, but that's one of those ugly names.
You said mean dick. It just made me think of like a dick with a grievance. Like, son of a bitch, you're gonna stick me in that damn Mabel again.
Jesus. Well, all right.
An angry dick. A mean dick.
I mean, you know, you have to do a lot of foreplay.
Look at her. She's ugly. I don't want to go in there.
Oh, my God.
Well, I'm just saying that it would be advantageous.
No, you don't need to say anything
because
else.
Because I don't think he was there. I don't think she was there to talk about Freud or Friedrich Nietzsche.
Well, clearly she was.
Unless she was talking like this.
Maybe they were discussing penis envy or something.
Wow. Okay.
Maybe he had a book rested on the back of her head.
Oh, my God. Maybe it was Nietzsche or whatever the fuck you said.
It's Nietzsche.
That's all right. Stupid.
And angry dicks.
So, anyway.
It's what like, happened? It's like what happened, Brandy?
So, this guy ends his dates on Timmy time at 7:45.
We should have created an app,
evening.
A game called Angry Dicks.
Angry Dicks.
Yeah. Well, we got the angry vaginas on our page.
Oh, God, did we? We got the vagina.
I'm just wondering. You're the one who wanted to start this early so that we could get out of here.
I'm just trying to add to the conversation. That's all.
Yeah, you are. All right. So he walks her to her car, leaves.
Mabel.
Yeah.
Let's set
okay.
the stage.
Let me.
It's 45 degrees, yeah, Los Angeles.
Let me. No, doesn't say
February
that.
February 1st,
doesn't say that.
1922, yeah. 7:45 p.m.
Thanks for the recap.
Thank you.
Jesus Christ. So he walks her to her car, ugly leaves the door to his house.
He's thinking, man, I can't wait to get this bitch out of here. Because Eloise is coming next. Eloise is due here about 8:15.
Eloise?
And is my dick going to be mad?
Then tomorrow night we got Gertrude.
What about Eugenia?
Okay, so what happens?
Are you going to let me tell you? Or, okay, well,
please,
I'm just... Well, I'm trying to tell you. So anyway, he walks her... Bottom line is, he walks her out to the car and leaves either door open or he leaves the door unlocked to his house.
Well, that's not very wise.
On Alvarado Street.
Now, if he would have had Rudy, he could have done that. But without Rudy in the house, you don't want to do that shit.
So as her chauffeur drove off, they blew kisses to one another.
Because you don't want to really kiss that bitch.
So with the exception of the murderer, Mabel was the last person to see William Desmond Taylor alive.
Oh, okay.
Taylor went back into his house, and at about 8 o'clock, a neighbor said they heard a car backfire. The neighbor, Faith McLean, went to the window and saw that what she first believed to be a man in a long coat wearing a muffler or with his collar turned up and a plaid cap over his face.
Oh, very stylish, whoever it was.
Well, clearly.
Well, the muffler would have made it easier for him to sneak up.
You're talking about the muffler you put your hands in, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, not the muffler under your car.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, he was wearing the muffler that you have under the car. That's what was happening. So, he took a look at her and then went back inside like he'd forgotten something.
Well, you know, kind of shrugged.
Yeah.
Turned a page.
Well, and later she said that he had an effeminate walk and was funny looking.
He was sashaying.
So this clown sashayed back into the house is what happened.
Now remember, this is going to come up later. Remember the effeminate walk.
I always
this
do.
This is key to this whole thing.
How could you forget?
I cannot. So, excuse
me. Good effeminate walk.
More than a decade later, during grand jury testimony, when pressed by the sheriff and asked if she could be certain that it was a man that she saw, she answered that she could not.
Okay, so she's
another
some
neighbor.
Doubt.
Thank you. Another neighbor named Hazel Gillen stated that she just saw a dark figure after hearing the car backfire. It was all quiet on Alvarado Street until 7:30 in the morning the next day when Taylor's houseman...
He had a houseman?
He did, and his name was Henry Peavy.
Hank.
So hold on, so far in
his friends called him Hank.
Hank Peavy.
So far in this, what we have is a Hazel, a Mabel,
and Eloise. Ethel.
Ethel.
Two Ethels.
Two Ethels, yeah. And a Percy.
And a Pervy. Peavy.
Pervy.
Pervy.
Peavy.
All right.
So Peavy.
Uh-huh. The houseman.
Yeah. He finds Taylor laying dead on the living room floor, so he screams and runs out into the courtyard.
Well, I mean, that is probably a shocking sight.
Well, runs into the courtyard.
Do you think he was doing jazz hands?
I think he does. I think he was. That's what I have in my mind. Yeah. And chaos ensued, as it was the studio that was called first and not the police.
So studio's looking out for their interests.
Yeah. So these dumb shits thought might be natural causes until they actually looked at the body and noticed that he was laying in a pool of blood, shot once in the back.
Also, Quincy showed up.
Right. So,
well, that would rule out rule out natural causes, it seems to me.
So he called the studios first. So representatives of Paramount showed up and came and seized all of the letters that they could find. Except
Jesus
for,
Christ.
Well, Taylor had hidden some in his riding boot. And they took out all the,
that's where I keep all my letters.
Well, sure. And they took away all the bootleg liquor.
Because this was during Prohibition.
Right.
They took the bootleg
liquor? They took the bootleg liquor.
In the boot.
Did he keep his bootleg liquor in the boot?
That's where he kept his letters.
They took the boot letters and the boot liquor.
Okay.
So they tell poor little Peavy, who I'm sure now is just in hysterics and had to be slapped.
He's got the vapors. He's clutching his pearls.
He clutched the pearls, the whole bit.
Poor Henry.
So they tell him, you're going to have to clean all this mess up real quick.
So they make Henry clean it up?
So he's got to clean up the blood in the apartment.
He's got to find the body, and then he's got to mop up the blood?
He does. Well, you don't expect these fuckers to do it. So the industry, you know, the industry's in peril.
Looking for a new job.
Well, he clearly has to now.
Yeah, I guess
Billy's dead.
So he's like the Cato Caitlin of his.
It seems like it, yeah.
Being that guy's manservant just became a very easy job.
I think you're right.
So, you know, the motion picture industry, well, it was still very young, and they were having all kinds of problems with scandals.
Right.
So, you know, this was all during the time that they had the rape and murder trial of Fatty Arbuckle.
We did a podcast on.
There were also the drug addictions of Wallace Reed and Jack Pickford. That's Mary's brother, Jack Pickford.
Yeah. Mary Pickford. She was a very famous actress.
When you were a kid, I'm sure.
I had her poster on my wall.
I was going to talk about Mary Pickford. Yeah,
got a poster in her bikini with no bra. Farrah Fawcett.
Here's the thing. And there was the mysterious...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Harry's death of Pickford's wife, Jack Pickford's wife, Olive.
Scandalous. Olive?
Yes.
Olive. So Olive wasn't very hot.
This is like a whole shrew of ugly women names.
Yeah.
Slew. The word is slew.
I know. I was looking at you and shrew came
he
to
He was
mind.
Slurring his slew.
Yeah.
Yeah. So women's clubs and religious groups were all up in arms about the film industry.
They, as they should be.
And they were threatening to boycott films.
There was a Den of Gomorrah in there.
Mm. The studios could not afford another Hollywood scandal. So by the time the cops decided to roll up on their horses, or what the fuck ever took them so long, the crime scene was compromised. In Taylor's pockets...
Somebody dug a damn the bullet out with a penknife.
They mopped up the scene.
Mopped up the blood, yeah.
In Taylor's pockets, investigators found a wallet with $78 in cash, a silver cigarette case.
Nice.
A Wathom pen watch, a penknife, or I'm sorry, a pocket watch, a penknife, and a locket bearing a photograph of actress Mabel Normand. There was also a 2-carat diamond ring on his finger.
Hmm.
So clearly,
he was styling.
Robbery was not the motive.
He was a baller.
See, he's much like mine. You just had this
very sophisticated, like you, like yourself, Colonel. Continue, Brandy.
It's stainless steel.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's not a diamond, though, is it?
Well, if you're gonna get all judgy,
there's no diamonds on it.
Oh, he's a man of means.
That's not a judgment call.
I could have a diamond ring if I wanted
that's
one.
That's not a judgment call. It's a fucking fact. There's no diamond on your hand.
I'm just saying. I'm stylish.
Just staying. Just quit. All right, so he's got this big Harkin ring on his finger. Robbery is not the motive. However, a large but undetermined sum of cash that Taylor had shown his accountant the day before was missing and apparently never accounted for. After some investigation, the time of Taylor's death was set at 7:50 on the evening of the 1st of February, 1922. While being interviewed by the police 5 days after the director's body was found, Mary Miles Mentor said that following the murder, a friend, director and actor Marshall Nealon, told her Taylor had made several highly delusional statements about some of his social acquaintances.
I'm calling bullshit on that.
Including her during the weeks before his death.
She tried to cover her tracks.
She also said Nealon thought Taylor had recently become insane.
Yeah.
So did anybody find Nealon to ask them? Did you fucking say this? Because I'm guessing that he's either dead or he didn't say it.
Right. I'm with you there.
Okay. So insane. Reporters descended on the property. And officials investigating the scene were very sensitive to the damage it could do to Los Angeles's leading industry. In the midst of this media circus, the Los Angeles undersheriff, whatever, Eugene...
That's not a sheriff, by the way.
Yeah, he's under the sheriff.
It's deputy.
Yeah, sometimes the wife is under the sheriff. She's the undersheriff.
Yeah.
Well, his name is Eugene Biscaglia.
Eugene! So we got ugly women and ugly men.
You knew he wore glasses.
Thick black ones. Yeah. He had some tape around the edges of them.
But this guy warned the Chicago Tribune reporter Eddie Doherty... The industry's been hurt. Stars have been ruined. Stockholders have lost millions of dollars. A lot of people are out of jobs and incensed enough to take a shot at you. More than a dozen individuals were eventually named as suspects by both press and the police. Because why not try it out there in the public forum?
Yeah, throw it out there.
Newspaper reports at the time were both overwhelmingly sensationalized and speculative, even fabricated, and the murder was used as the basis for much subsequent true crime fiction. Many inaccuracies were carried forward by, I think it's letter writers or later writers. I don't know.
Literati.
Later writers.
The Illuminati.
Oh, okay.
The Illuminati.
Who used articles from the popular press as their sources. Overall, most accounts have consistently focused on seven people as suspects and witnesses. No one was ever charged with the murder of William Desmond Taylor, and officially it remains an open case. Although a combination of poor crime scene management and apparent corruption, the physical evidence was lost.
So it's kind of like if you got me and Timmy to come and investigate it.
Yeah.
You'd have corruption and you'd have...
Right.
Corruption and incompetence all over.
Well, let's talk about the suspects.
And impotence.
And bloody stool.
Well, once you got Mabel there, of course bloody you got stool. Impotence. And people pointing guns in your faces, you ain't going to have no...
Colonel is the face of bloody stool.
He is. Let's talk about the suspects. So they laid Mabel as a suspect since she was the last one to have seen him.
That's a likely suspect.
They didn't really think that she did it, but she thought maybe she indirectly caused his death. Because they'd been dating and... She was a drug addict. She had a problem with cocaine and opium. And little Billy was trying to get her to kick her habit. Taylor had arranged a stay for Normand at the Betty Ford Clinic, which must have been one of the first cases.
I don't think it was Betty Ford Clinic
then. Don't you worry about it. Well, it's Betty Ford. The celebrated
Betty
actor.
Betty Ford wasn't even born back then.
Don't you worry about it. It was Betty Ford.
It was the Henry Ford.
Whatever. So intent was Taylor on keeping drugs away from the studios and actors, including Norman, that he headed a commission against drugs, of which he was chairman of the board. So he was the drug czar.
Well, he sounds like a little goody two-shoes.
Yeah, so that whole theory is the drug dealers killed him.
I don't know. We're getting there.
Yeah. So the drug dealers killed him. In response to him trying to clean up Hollywood.
Well, I haven't had lunch, so if you could get that quickly, I'd appreciate that.
Well, if we'd have done this right the first time, we wouldn't have this issue.
Don't air our dirty laundry, devil.
So she was spending like $2,000 a month on drugs. He was bound and determined he was going to squish the drug dealers. So, and he made a lot of enemies that way. Before she died of tuberculosis in 1930.
The consumption?
Consumption.
She had the consumption.
Well, you know, if you're doing crack and you're doing heroin, it lowers your...
Crack.
She did cocaine. She did opiates.
I bet she was freebasing.
Yeah, probably.
Well, one of the last statements that she made before she died was, I wonder who killed poor Bill Taylor. So they were actually in love. They wrote letters back and forth to each other, and
yeah. So she's probably not the guilty party, but maybe her dealers were.
Maybe her dealers. But let's talk about Mary Miles' mentor.
All right, yeah. This woman is a more likely suspect.
She's a loon.
Mm-hmm.
So this golden-haired actress had astonishingly beautiful blue eyes, and she adored Billy Taylor.
She had the hots for
him. She was 20 years. Yes.
I gotta look her up.
She All was right. 20 years old at the time of the murder. She'd written him letters professing her undying love for him. Some of them were made public after the murder, but they were written in kind of a schoolgirl crush. Wasn't anything.
How old was she? 20.
She was 20. Mary Miles Minter.
Mary Miles Minter. Okay.
Decades later, she would refer to Taylor as my mate, and claim that they were engaged, which really wasn't true. Mentor had visited Taylor on more than one occasion, slipping out of the house at night after her mother, Charlotte Shelby, grandmother Julia, and sister Margaret were asleep.
She rates pretty high on the... But she's got... She's
attractive.
On the bangability factor, she's right up there.
She threw herself at Taylor while he reportedly tried to get her... Or tried to let her down gently, explaining that he was old enough to be her father.
Oh, well, he was being responsible.
The day before his murder, Taylor complained to a friend that Mentor did not take the breakup well and was very angry. Mentor told investigators she'd not seen Taylor for a long time, and the last time she'd seen him in Los Angeles, they'd passed cars and, like, waved at each other. But that was a lie. Now I'm Maury Povich. That statement was a lie.
Okay.
Investigators were able to prove that she had been in his apartment a bunch of times, but unable to prove for sure that she'd actually been there the night of the murder. Three long blonde hairs were found on Taylor's jacket, and were determined by the police to be those of Mary by matching them with hairs left on her brush at the studio.
Oh, clever.
Quincy really did show up.
Clever detective work there. I'm sure they were there. forensic was very advanced in 1922.
Oh, yeah, 1922. They even have microscopes back then.
That's a hair, and that's a hair.
Investigators had theorized that Mary visited Taylor the night of the murder. She threw herself at him again, this time threatening to shoot him or herself. He embraced her to calm her down, and the gun accidentally went off.
Oh. And in his back?
The powder burns.
I think they want to rework that theory. Yeah,
I was giving him a hug and the gun. Yeah. That don't work.
So unless she had a strap on.
Yeah. If she was behind him giving him a reach around, the gun could have accidentally gone off.
Possible, Brandy. You got to admit this.
Now, Devil, if you're ever in a position of holding a gun against somebody.
Do you see this? Right here? This is unamused.
Yeah. She's trying to get through her script. Let her go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's just go. Come on, Devil. We got time. I got to eat lunch.
There was an incident back in 1920 where old Mary had a tantrum in her room and got her mother's gun, and shots were fired after she locked herself in the room.
Oh, this is a good one.
When they finally got into her room, they broke into her room, she jumped up and laughed.
Ta-da!
Yeah,
psych.
Tricked you.
So she's a little drama queen.
Oh, so she's a keeper. Keeper.
You know what would have been better if she would have taken it? See, to make that really work, you got to take the cat and blow the cat brains against the wall and whatnot. And then you got to sit against the wall below it.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
No, I'm just saying, if you're really going
to pull
that
off. Do you ever want to have lunch again?
If you're really committed to this, that's all I'm saying.
In the rafters of the home where the Shelby family lived at the time of the fake suicide incident was an unfired soft-nosed lead bullet, which was the same type and weight as the fatal bullet, which was extracted from Taylor's body.
Ah, so that's suspicious.
It is. It's suspect big time.
I don't know.
Okay. What happened?
Well, we got some other. Here's who I think did it.
All right, continue, Colonel.
Charlotte Shelby. Now, Charlotte was Mary Minter's mother.
Okay.
And she was this crazy-ass stage mother.
Right.
And she also had access to this same gun. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, she wanted to be an actress at one time, but she was not all that attractive, and, you know, so she just did not.
Living through her daughter.
Yeah, so the theory is she dressed as a man, slipped into Taylor's bungalow, and found Mary there and shot Taylor.
Mm. She's Kris Kardashian, that's who she is.
And the compelling bit of evidence against her is she owned this rare .38 caliber pistol with the unusual bullets similar to the kind that killed her.
Mm. And she's in protecting her interest, which is their daughter.
And a year later, she went down to Louisiana and threw the pistol in the Louisiana Bayou. Jimmy?
Man.
Now, when Minter was pregnant, she was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
As a teenager, she got pregnant, is what I meant to say. Uh-huh. By director James Kirkwood, and reportedly, Shelby, her mother, paid for an abortion. And she threatened Kirkwood with this .38 revolver. I mean, she was like Annie Oakley.
Yeah, so she has a temper.
She walks in one day and there's an actor. Now, this is a cool name to me. Mm. Monty Blue.
Monty Blue.
You know he's a ladies' man.
Yeah, he's probably a porn star.
She came in and found her daughter and him in a passionate embrace. And she pulled that revolver out and shoved it right in his face and said, I'll blow your goddamn brains out.
So she's a little unhinged. So she sounds like she's a pretty viable suspect.
Yeah, and to quote another one, she is said to later have burst into Taylor's office and quote, if I ever catch you hanging around with Mary again, I'll blow your goddamn brains out.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, suspicious.
Anyone that had an interest in Mary, she would chase off.
Okay.
Now, strangely, she wasn't even questioned until 1937 when there was a lawsuit between her other daughter, Margaret, who testified, I protected Mom against the Taylor murder case.
Mm.
Now, this spurred a grand jury to look into this, and Shelby insisted that the grand jury clear her name.
Mm-hmm.
She insisted that the grand jury convene, look at this, and clear her. But her alibi was a guy named Carl Stockdale for that night.
Mm-hmm.
Later came to light that she had paid Stockdale $200 a month for life, Timmy, to say he was the alibi.
Okay, so she's paying off witnesses here.
She's paying off witnesses. She paid off the prosecutors. When the IRS looked into her in 1931, Timmy,
She had $750,000 in stocks and negotiable bonds, hidden places.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So, you know, she's so what you got throughout this whole thing, and I think she's the one that did it, is she was paying people off.
Paying witnesses off. Paying witnesses she had the off. Gun. She had erratic history of erratic behavior and threatening people around her.
She would threaten this bitch in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Now, you got another guy that's a wild card in here, Timmy.
Okay, who's that?
That's Edward Sands.
Okay.
Now, Edward Sands had a, he hired this sociopath, Edward Sands, also known as Edward Snyder, as his houseman.
Another houseman?
Mm-hmm. Now, Sands pretended to be a British, a Cockney, but he was from Ohio. And now, what kind of sociopath takes up a fake accent and pretends you're from somewhere else when you're from Ohio, Jimmy?
I don't know anyone who would give a fake accent and pretend he's from somewhere else but from Ohio. Do you, Brandy?
I don't know.
No, I don't know who would do that.
Would not trust that man as far as I could throw him.
Oh, no, you don't do that, yeah.
So, anyway, you couldn't do Google searches back on people then, you know? Right. It ain't like now.
Right.
So he just hires the guy. Now, this Sands guy, he was charged with fraud and embezzlement in 1915. He got dishonorably discharged after 1 year of hard labor in 1916 in the Navy. Then he enlisted in the Naval Reserve and stole an automobile and crashed it.
Okay, they must not kept very good records.
Well, I'll tell you why, Timmy.
Why?
In 1919, he enlisted in the Navy again. And was assigned to the finance office. So he
can't get enough of him, can he?
He forged a check to himself for $481.53 and then forged his own honorable discharge papers.
There you go.
Now, the first year of his employment went really smoothly. He said that he offered to be the guy's slave for life. William Taylor, he's saying, I'll be your slave.
So he liked William.
I think there was maybe a little kinky there, but anyway. 1921 comes along, a year and a half later. Taylor takes a trip to Europe. Sands forges $5,000 in checks.
Oh, he's Cato Caitlin.
And stole and wrecked Taylor's car.
Damn.
He also stole jewelry, and this is where you got to draw the line, his Russian gold-tipped cigarettes.
Oh, there's no going back after that, after you stole those.
No, so a few months later, Taylor came home and found the distinctive cigarettes crushed and smoked on the porch indicated that Sands had come back to the bungalow.
That probably pissed him off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sands, you know, he's... So, anyway, and in a 1922 article, Julia Crawford Ivers, who was a good friend of Taylor's, said, "There was never a more devoted man serving another man than this Sands during the first year and a half." That being the key part of his service to Mr. Taylor. Mr. Taylor trusted him with everything. After several thefts, Taylor finally fired Sands, who vowed revenge.
Okay.
As he did it in that Cockney accent, too.
Okay.
I'll be back to get you,
guys. So he had this guy pissed at him, too.
Yeah, there was all kinds of weird things. And the night before his murder, he showed up with his tax records. Or he showed up with his... to his tax preparer, Marjorie Berger, with $5,000 in cash.
Okay.
The night before his death, after he was shot and killed, that was never found.
All right.
So Sands, it's a possibility that Sands got pissed off, comes back and gets him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This guy had a lot of people wanted him dead, it sounds
like. Yeah. Yeah, he's like, so anyway, he's like the colonel, really. Not people after me.
Yeah.
They're jealous, haters. But it would seem that Sams would be the prime suspect.
Yeah, it would sound like it, yeah.
With the exception of the fact that he signed in for work at a lumber yard in Oakland, California on the day of the murder.
Oh, well, that's a long ways from Los Angeles, so that probably rules him out.
Yeah, and they also used Sands because he was found dead from suicide in Connecticut, and the district attorney, Woolwine, who was very corrupt throughout this whole thing. And Woolwine, you got to understand, Woolwine did not want to charge a woman with this crime because he thought, I charge a woman, it's a death penalty offense, no jury will convict a woman of a death penalty offense.
And he's a political figure.
It's going to fuck me up politically. Right. So he just kept letting it go. And he liked the idea that Sands did this. Mm-hmm. So when he found out that Sands was dead, he didn't tell anybody at all. So Woolwine continued to hunt for this guy he knew was dead.
Okay.
All right.
Just so he didn't have to deal with the case politically.
Yeah. Okay. Here's the strangest one of all
time. Okay. What, the last suspect?
Yeah. Margaret Gibson, her name's Pat Lewis, and a guy named Ray Long, he's living in Los Angeles in the early 60s, all right?
All right, this is 40 years later.
Yeah. He had been the neighbor of a reclusive old little old woman and did not leave the who didn't leave the house much and had groceries delivered. This woman, he knew her as Pat Lewis, was a widow and a friend of his mother's. Now, one day in 1964, the woman who, this woman had been a Roman Catholic, she was having a heart attack and asked for a priest to confess. Mm-hmm. I'd ask for a goddamn ambulance, but she asked for a priest.
Okay.
Or one of those, I'd like, you know, could I have the shocky things?
Yeah, well, I think she knew that the end was near.
The end was nigh, Timmy. The end was nigh. No priest being available, she began to make a deathbed confession anyway, saying that she had once been a silent film actress and she had shot and killed a man named William Desmond Taylor. Now, Long didn't know who the hell this even was. Now, Long's mother revealed that one evening she and Pat Lewis, air quotes, were watching Ralph's Story, which is apparently
a TV show.
TV show on Los Angeles. And when a piece on the Taylor murder aired, the Lewis woman became hysterical. So, Margaret Gibson, here's where it gets interesting. Margaret Gibson.
It's about time. It's
hour and 45 minutes into this thing.
The exquisitely beautiful actress and Pat Lewis were one in the same, Timmy.
Oh, so she had worked with, she was an actress and she
was
had
a silent film actress. She'd been arrested for vagrancy connected with some opium dealing.
Mm-hmm. She was into the drugs too, huh?
In what was called a disorderly house.
Yeah, kind of like Brandy's.
Yeah, a house of prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
She was acquitted, and after this, she changed the name to Patricia Palmer.
Okay, becoming sort of a recluse.
Yeah. Okay. No. She kept going on to be an actress.
Okay.
So she later changed her name back to Pat.
Okay. So anyway.
Pat Lewis.
Okay.
Pat, she was Margaret Gibson, then she became Margaret Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Margaret Gibson, I'm sorry, Timmy. Now, she was arrested, again, on felony charges involving blackmail and extortion and a whole ring.
So she had some skeletons in her closet.
Yeah. And they did have a connection because they worked together.
Her and William Desmond Taylor.
Yeah, that she worked together in silent movies, and she worked at Paramount in 1921. So she would have had to have seen him on the lot. So
it's possible, isn't it?
Was Gibson somehow involved with a group of people in blackmailing Taylor, Timmy?
Blackmailing, or maybe it was drugs?
Given her arrest concerning blackmail and drugs, could this be a possibility? Could it be, Timmy, that a drug ring, a drug nay, Timmy, a cartel, a drug cartel, had she gotten on, had Mr. Taylor gotten on that last nerve, and came in and just put an end to the man?
Well, she confessed to it.
Now, during his lifetime, he was described as an individual who enjoyed his solitude, Mr. Taylor.
He enjoyed his women, too.
And his ladies, yeah. He had maybe some ugly ones named Mabel, but, you know. And much like the Colonel, his intelligence, sophistication, and gentlemanly manners made him sought after as a guest at gatherings.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
Now, and he was a three-term president of the Motion Picture Directors Association and tried very hard to keep drugs out of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Timmy, much like you and I, he was around unsavory characters, much like you and I.
Yeah, Brandy.
I know what he's going for. I mean,
he was involved with emotionally unbalanced women.
Brandy.
Okay. But for all the notoriety of his death, the gravestone of William Desmond Taylor reads very simply,
William. Go fuck yourself.
C. Dean-Tanner,
which is ironic
because it's not.
I have a Tana and a Taylor.
It is
ironic.
It's an amazing story. It is amazing. Brandy, who do you think killed a young William Desmond Taylor?
Mama.
You think it was Charlotte?
I do.
Okay. Colonel, who do you think killed William Desmond Taylor?
I think that will be the devil's mother, Trebek.
You think it was Charlotte, too?
You think it was my mother? I don't put
that. I kind of think it
was. You know who I think it was?
Well, who?
I think it was Chauncey.
The chauffeur. I'm thinking it's Pat, the one who confessed to it, because I don't know why you would confess to murder if you didn't do it.
No, because when Pat, remember I told you about the effeminate walk?
Uh-huh.
Okay, by this time, Pat's probably already packing about 3 inches of penis, Timmy. So she ain't going to have an effeminate walk. She's going to be walking around like she all ballsy. But the one Percy and Chauncey, you know they got effeminate walks.
Hey, Brandy, any final thoughts on William Desmond Taylor?
Nope.
That's, I'm pretty sure you were pretty confident.
That's a definitive no.
Okay, Colonel, shout-outs real quickly, please.
All right. Well, we're going to start our shout-outs with who we should start with every shout-out
Tasha.
Tasha. And then we got Jeff Girdley, Sam Hildebrand, Angie Ball, Jennifer and Linda, Missy Dean Horton, Brittany and Chris, Celine, Jeff Chestnut, Teresa Slavin, Tommy Boom Boom.
Tommy Boomer Shine.
We got Shonda and Larry and the Trowbridges, Timmy.
Yeah, Larry wanted this story, so hope you enjoyed it, Larry.
Colton,
mm-hmm.
Phyllis Munson, hello,
hey,
Phyllis.
Hey, Phyllis.
Aaron Wentz and Donna Curran, Brian and Lisa Lawton, Olivia Meyer, our two little beauties here, Fallon and, well, Olivia's a beauty too, Fallon and Katya,
mm-hmm.
Monica, Monica Big D.
I'm Monica.
D. Augustino, Sandy September, Bridget Clavey, Byron Snellings, Denny Mack, William Tro, Amber Krupp, Gina Spillane, Trixie, Stephanie Quick, Sydney and Michael, Jamie T., Laura O'Reilly, Gabby Lewis, Sunstar,
Bond,
Jean Bond.
That's right. Lydia, Brandy McBride, Maggie Glover, Jeff Appel, Christine
Bourgeois.
That's right. And a lovely, 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 and very patient because she puts up with me making fun of his name every week, and I ain't going to do it. Katie Moorhead.
Hey, Katie.
Very funny girl. Very funny lady. Mary Ray, of course. We got Rebecca Montanle, Mike Eisenhower, Daniel Fredrickson, Andrew Valerio Bishop, Mr. V.V. Ali.
Yes.
You can't forget him. Nancy, of course. Nancy Palomino.
Nancy.
Kim Kamikaze, Jennifer Hawkins, Tara Nee, Lindsay O'Brien McMillan, and Sunayana, Eddie Rushing, Yo Handler, Sammy James, Jason, of course, Jason Dykes, Amy Carol Payne, Tyra Jenkins, Annette Petrie, hope you're up on your feet and feeling better there, Annette, Christina Montana.
Hey, Christina.
Christina, you get 3 shout-outs, and you know why. Christina, Christina, Christina. Maria Barber, Jennifer Potts, Cindy Overstreet Hamilton, and let's see who we got. Melissa Lebrano, Brittany Powell, the two Heathers, Heather Hall, Heather Poole, Maggie Glover, I got her already. Mr. Hopkins, I believe it's Jeff Hopkins. Steve Miller.
Steve Miller Band.
Fat Boy Gardner.
Absolutely.
And, of course, we got the Colonel's crew.
All right, lay them on me.
Angie Ball.
Mm-hmm.
My two consiglieres, Nicola and Allie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, really, Allie's my enforcer. Nicola's the...
Yeah.
Sarah Mimosa. Sweet little Sarah. Just a lovely little girl, Tim. I shouldn't say little girl. That sounds condescending. Mm-hmm. But when the girl's young enough to be my daughter's.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jim Burdick.
Yes.
Just a lovely, very lovely nice young lady. Then we got Karen Barnes, who I made a mistake, Timmy, on her, and I said it was her anniversary. It was the anniversary of her husband's stroke.
Oh, okay.
He is doing much better. He's recovering.
We're glad to hear that.
Karen is working herself silly trying to get him back on his feet and taking care of the kids and doing whatnot, but they have been together for 18 years.
Wow.
I said it was their first anniversary.
That's a long time.
They've been married for 13, been together for 18.
Awesome. That's great.
So, you know, they had a little rough patch, I guess, a year ago with his health, but.
Well, we're glad he's doing better.
As Karen said, for better or for worse, and she is doing everything she can to get him back on his feet. Janet Fitzgerald, Frances Darden, of course, the two lovely Irish lasses, Timmy. Our Chicago crazy friend, Jessica Williams, who is dead inside.
It's not true.
No, she posted
that. I know. Thing.
She's very funny. Jessica is very, lovely very lady. Funny. She's a beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda Bocce Ball.
Sure.
And Steve Miller. Did I say Steve?
Yeah, you got him before.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And let's see. We got the girl who does the Lord's work every single day, Timmy. Every single day she's doing the Lord's work. If it ain't for the Church of the Latter-day Colonel, she's doing it for Amnesty International. Who is that, Timmy?
That would be the lovely Shannon.
Lovely Shannon Rossett. Shannon, we appreciate what you do for everybody.
Absolutely.
And your commitment. Of course, we got Lady Beverly, who's getting back on her feet from her surgery.
Yeah, we hope you're doing better, Lady Beverly.
Absolutely. And then we've got the lovely Dottie Scott, yes. Who, you know, if you're noticing an improvement in sound, don't thank us. Thank Dottie Scott, because she's the one that picked up the tab on all this equipment here.
Yes, thanks, Mom.
So
where can people find us, Colonel?
People can find us on the Facebook, Timmy. They can find us on the Sirius page, the History Dweebs page. They can find us on the, where we all interact with each other and have a good laugh now and again, on the History Dweebs, the podcast page.
Yeah, that's a Facebook group. So join us, and you can, all the folks we mentioned here, we give shout outs to, they're all part of that page, and it's a fun group. So join us. That's History Dweebs, the podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at HistoryDweebs1. If you are listening to us on iTunes, we ask that you subscribe and please leave us a review. If it's a positive review, you're sure to get a shout out next podcast. We appreciate that. That allows people to find us. If you would like to contribute to our podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/historydweebs. And thank you very much for listening in today. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you next time on...
Let me add one thing real quick here, Timmy. For all those who have asked, Rudy is healing up nicely.
Oh,
your lover offerings came in handy. And Jason Dykes asked me, how could he find the Colonel's evangelical hour? And you got to go to local cable access channel 1036.
True. That's not true.
Tuesday at 3
a.m. We'll see
Cincinnati,
you next time on
Tuesday at 3 a.m.
History Dweebs. Goodbye, everyone.
Good day.
Okay.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.